Welcome to Crosstown Cardboard, a sports card podcast with two collectors from opposite sides of New York City. Craig and Carmine share sports card stories from the perspective of a teacher and broadcaster. This is Crosstown Cardboard.
Welcome to Crosstown Cardboard, episode 79, and we're calling this episode, Sometimes When You Lose, You Really Win. And I myself confused that the first time I said it. We're actually re-recording. And that's why we have Craig to explain. That's my co-host and my podcast partner at New York City Sports Cards on Instagram. He's the math teacher and soccer coach in New York City. And I'm Carmine at Carmine's Cards, the sports storyteller down here in Greenville, South Carolina, getting ready for all the March Madness. And Craig, we're trying to make sense of this quote because it applies to our card life. It's also a little bit philosophical. We try to, you know, take whatever you want from Crosstown Cardboard into your real life or personal life. Just trying to put some thoughtful and hopefully entertaining stuff out there. So, Craig, please explain the title of episode 79, Sometimes When You Lose, You Really Win.
So, first of all, great to see you. You have been busy covering that South Carolina LSU women's basketball game. You are up close and personal for that game. So that is awesome.
Yes, first and foremost. Very, very busy. Camila Cardoso, Angel Reese, big time battle. Maybe we'll see them in the NCAA tournament.
Oh, that'll be epic if they rematched in the tournament. But yes, sir. To the episode, we'll get into the details. But to put it simple, I've been selling a lot of cards lately. Some of them have been for a loss, which at first, you know, first glance is, well, you sold for a loss. That stinks. But there are positives to take out of that. And that's what we're going to get to. But first, I'm going to read the full quote. And as I read this quote, if you're listening, I would love to see if you can get the actress and the movie that this quote came from.
Mm-hmm. Sports-related movie.
One of my favorite sports movies ever.
Yeah, I agree.
Sometimes when you win, you really lose. And sometimes when you lose, you really win. And sometimes when you win or lose, you actually tie. And sometimes when you tie, you actually win or lose. Winning or losing is all one organic mechanism from which one extracts what one needs. Think about it. If you said Rosie Perez from White Men Can't Jump, you would be correct. And we are going to build off of that quote. Again, one of my favorite sports movies ever. Mm-hmm. How cool would that be, especially with like the 90s fashion? Maybe a little dual relic autograph from Woody Harrelson. And I'm drawing a blank.
Rosie Perez.
Oh, I didn't mean
Wesley Snipes.
Wesley Snipes.
Yeah. You know what? We need it from the hat, from those flat brim turned up hats with the colorful logo. And hey, fun fact, Craig. I dressed up for Halloween with one of my ex-girlfriends as Woody Harrelson and Rosie Perez from White Men Can't Jump.
I love that. For you.
She had no idea about the movie or what they dress like. And I showed her and I told her about White Men Can't Jump. And I told her I drew inspiration from that movie. And then she came on board and said, I'll support you in this Halloween wardrobe. But let's get back to this meaning of this quote and how it applies to us, Craig. First of all, who knew Rosie Perez was dropping bars like this? Whoever wrote that, they really, I mean, you don't really quite realize it probably in the movie, but man, they did a great job writing that. And what do you, as a coach, first of all, like, does this hold true? Because, you know, a lot of coaches, and I know, of course, you have a lot of experience as a basketball and a soccer coach, say there's no moral victories. Oh, we lost. That's all it is, whatever. But this last line, winning or losing is all one organic mechanism from which one extracts what one needs. Do you agree with that as a coach?
I do agree with that. Obviously, that depends on the level. You know, I coach at the varsity level and we're trying to win games. That doesn't mean winning is everything. Mm-hmm. Right. But still, there's lessons we could take out of every game. Every game prepares us for the next one. When I coach at the club level, the younger girls, a little less emphasis on winning, a little more emphasis on teaching them to play the right way. So when they do play competitively, mm-hmm. they understand how to win, how to lose, how to play as a team. But let's get back to the cards.
Yeah.
And what inspired this is I'm in this little lull period personally. I'm not doing a ton of buying. I don't really have the chance to go to too many shows. Yes, I'll go to the local shops, but even then, it's a $20 card here, a pack here, just to get my fix, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting with this inventory. I like having inventory, stuff, as we like to call it here.
Stuff.
Because when you're set up at a show, you need stuff. You need your showcase to be filled. You need your value box to be filled. But with no show in the near future for me, what do I do with the stuff? These cards that, let's be honest, they don't really interest me. Because cards are one of two things. They're your personal collection or they're your inventory, right? There's really no gray area. So right. What do I do with these loose cards that are just sitting there? Like, yeah, maybe some stuff I could save, but stuff that I've kind of just lost interest in. What do? I got to sell it.
It's instead of selling stuff, it's just sitting stuff right now.
Precisely. So you know what? I would rather get rid of some cards that I don't necessarily want anymore. I don't really have use for because I'm not going to be at a show. Recoup those funds so that when I am ready to buy the next show I go to, I've got the stuff with me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I sold two cards recently. And here are the positives out of it. One of them was a really nice Ronald Acuna three-color game use patch that I picked up while I was in Denver over Thanksgiving.
Okay.
I was into the card for $100. I sold it on eBay for $100. But you take away the fees. Small little 15% loss. Listen, in this economy, I'll take a 15% loss.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do I do with those funds? I've got money, like I said, in my Venmo and my PayPal. I'm ready to strike when I see cool stuff that I want to buy.
Okay.
So the other loss, when we were in Culture Collision, I picked up the Hunmin Sun Gold Mosaic out of 10 in a PSA 10.
You were confident you were going to make a decent profit on that one.
Very confident. I paid $320 for the card, if you recall.
Yeah.
And it was the true mosaic gold. Unfortunately, since then, there was a recent comp that kind of hurt me.
Oh.
It wasn't the true gold. It was the fluorescent gold out of 10. It wasn't a PSA 10. It was an SGC 10. However, the sale was a jersey number, which for Sun collectors, he wears number 7 for both Tottenham and for South Korea. So there's a little premium on the jersey number. That sale went for $200.
Okay. I still don't think you had to. That's a good comp, in my opinion.
$200 for?
$200 for a PSA or a SGC 10. Okay. SGC 10. Okay. PSA 9, but not the true gold, the fluorescent gold.
Fluorescent gold, right.
Which knocks it down quite a bit, in my opinion.
But then the jersey number brings it.
I get the jersey number. Jersey number, I'm not crazy about. I know other people are crazy about. I honestly rather the first or the last of the serial number, but I do get the jersey number. But so I would value, if I was thinking about that, I would value yours at like 350, in that 300 to 350 range, I would think.
Well, I sold it for 275.
Okay, that's good. If you need to free up cash, that's good.
Sure, right? It's a $50 loss, but remember, what's the point? The title of this episode, sometimes when you lose, you really win. I lost $50 on this deal. Where's the win? Where's the victory in this? I was able to create a connection via Instagram, and I was able to get that card into someone who really truly collects Hunmin Sun.
Mm-hmm.
Luca Deli 23_collects on Instagram. We had been in communication about that card for a bit. I knew he was interested in it. And here I am in this low period. I got to make some moves. I reached out to him. I said, you know, if you want this card for $350, it's yours. He brought up the comp, all good. We settled in on a price at $275.
Yeah.
I was able to get that card into his collection. And I asked him, I'm like, you know, is this a card that is going to go to your PC? Because I know he collects them. He said, me too. It'll be a beautiful addition to my PC. And I said, hey, I'd much rather take a loss if it means the card goes to its forever home as opposed to someone flipping it.
Yeah.
So he said, yes, I have no intention to ever sell any of my Sunny cards. So you know what? I took a small loss. The card's in his collection. He's happy. I freed up some funds. And even though I took a little loss, I came out of that with a positive experience.
Yeah. I think that's great. I think that's a great, you know, tangible story you can point to and get a great lesson out of because, you know, it takes quite a bit more than, and anybody, you know, listening probably has felt this before where you're like, man, I got this card. I don't want to take a loss. And your pride is in the way, which I've had probably countless times of like, you know, which which for some, if you want to hold out for the price you want, that's great. And if you don't need to free up the funds, you know, or if you're going to shows more frequently, that could influence it too. But it's, to me, it's, and something you do really well, Craig, is like adapting to the hobby position you're in. So like you mentioned, you're in a lull, you're not going to that many shows, you're not going to have that many opportunities to transact. It's a lot easier to buy online than it is to sell online. You know, I mean, you can look at stuff, boom, boom, boom. Selling online, sometimes, you know, it takes more work, but you can always buy people's stuff. You know, that's easy. So explain to me this. How were you able to put that pride aside and take the loss, even though you could have held out for more?
I don't know if I could have held out for more. And listen, no one likes to take a loss. I am, fortunately, even with those losses, I'm still up 13% of all my sales for the year. So I'm able to look at that, you know, as a totality standpoint. Right. And at the end of the day, they weren't the Acuna patch that I sold on eBay and the Sun card that I sold on Instagram. They're just not cards that were going to be in my PC forever. Once that comp hit, listen, you understand how this market works. If someone's going to try to buy that card, of course they're going to hold that comp over my head. So I said, you know what? A small 15% loss, I could live with that.
Yeah.
If it means I get to just free up some funds and keep it going. Okay. We all take losses sometimes. And again, at the end of the day, it's not a card I was going to PC. So it's onto a different home now.
So what's your recommendation as far as like, if you see that recent comp, I mean, that really factors into it too, because how long are you going to have to wait to get a more favorable comp, or you could get a less favorable comp even from there. Yeah. So that's something also that if you see a recent comp, then it's kind of like, let me get what I can get out of this card, you know, in some cases.
Precisely. Yeah.
All right, bro. Well, I did the same thing. Coincidentally, you brought up this quote, and I think it's so great to tie the philosophical lesson into the cards also. But I also took a loss, but I view it as an overall win. And I'll explain what card I did that with recently, which was this Nick Chubb Spectra Neon Orange rookie numbered at a 10. So I got this graded actually at Burbank. I submitted it in person at the Burbank card show. This was now over a year ago. Got it back, got a 9. So it was all right, a BGS 9, because it was a thicker card. So I'm like, let me go with them. And, you know, Nick Chubb got hurt last season, and he doesn't have a huge market, especially now that he's been out and he's a Cleveland Brown, and, you know, all the luck to them this year, but, you know, they haven't been winning. So, and he's a running back. So I don't know. It was a card I was into for like 175, and you can see I have, if you're watching on the YouTube, I have the $175 sticker on here. Because there's not really that many comps. Like, it's a rookie at a 10, Spectra, which is, you know, not the main rookie card you're looking for, of course. Much more rather Select or Prism. So I'm like, you know what? Let me just get what I can out of this card. If somebody's interested in taking this in partial trade, even if it's a loss, it's like, at least I don't have to spend that amount of cash, you know? So I was going back and forth with my buddy on Instagram, AM Sports Cards. He has a lot of, I wonder if he only sells in the morning. So he's been a questioner.
Oh, I was just going to make a joke, but
that's his initials.
I know. I was going to say, does he change to PM when you guys
right, do that night? Right. After dark. Or, you know, you could really confuse him. AM after dark. That would be really you'd be so mind boggled. You'd lose the negotiation instantly. So anyway, he's a Browns fan from what I can tell. And the AM is his initials if you need clarification. So he was willing to accept the Nick Chubb in trade, but he wanted it at $75 of trade. So I'm like, that's $100 loss, or it's a $75 gain off this dead card. You know what I mean? So I'm trying to, now it still stings a little bit because I'm like, I lost $100. I went through the process to pay to get this graded. I don't normally do that. You know, it's a rookie out of 10. I thought it was kind of cool. But, you know, then I looked at it. I'm like, well, this card's been sitting with me for a year, similar to the Kevin Durant patch auto that I traded for, you know, along with three other cards for 24 cards that we went over in the last episode. So I'm like, you know, it's just sitting here. Let me get rid of it and at least get something out of it. So I traded the Nick Chubb plus 565 of cash, which is, that's a lot for me to, I haven't been showing
up. Hey, what are we getting out of this?
Unless it's a ticket, I haven't been paying that much money. So I'll have to let you know what ticket I spent slightly more on recently.
Whoa,
big spender. That tournament, SEC tournament overtime. No, I'm just kidding. So Chubb right here, Spectra, rookie out of 10, plus 565 cash for this Jim Brown, flawless, on-card auto, numbered 5 out of 5 with Jim Brown and his gold Hall of Fame jacket in Canton, Ohio.
Yeah, it's cool.
Not that many Jim Brown autos in flawless. I'll tell you what, those sales don't come up very often. So for me, it's my favorite brand, you know, along with Exquisite, but favorite modern brand of flawless. And an all-time NFL legend, pioneer, who everybody knows and respects. Numbered 5 out of 5, which I mentioned, I like the serial number. And it has the Hall of Fame photo and logo on there. So I think that's even a little bit cooler. So
yeah. Way cooler to have that in your collection.
Yeah. So, you know, like we said, did I technically take a financial loss? Yes. But at the same time, when you price out the Jim Brown flawless, there's hardly any sales. There's really, you know, the last comp on that sold for $750, but there was a white box 1 of 1 that went for $650. Now, if I'm a collector, I honestly think the 5 out of 5 is better, because the white box 1 of 1, people view that as kind of like a cheapy, you know, it kind of cheapens it. And it's like, well, this was just one, and they put the white box 1 of 1 stamp on the back. You know,
a Fugazi 1 of 1.
It's a Fugazi 1 of 1. That's a great way to put the white box 1 of 1.
Wait. I'm going to write that down in the hobby glossary. Okay. Fugazi 1 of 1.
Fugazi 1 of 1. Tony Gwynn. We have cool to cost ratio.
We're going to have to get into that. Really.
CTCR. That might be my next tattoo. CTCR.
I'm working on a formula too.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Really? I'm very interested to hear this, because for me, it's all been like the eye test, but you're saying you have some analytics to put to the eye test of CTCR.
Basic math, but.
Okay. I mean, I'm interested to solve for X.
Nice. Nice. I'm sure you're happy to get out of that Nick Chubb. Mistake number one is probably grading that in the first place, but hey.
Right.
We're all here for learning lessons.
Good point. Yeah, that's a good point. I just kind of threw it in with two others that I was grading. But, you know, like we mentioned a few episodes ago, sometimes it's just like for the fun of it. It doesn't always have to be because it's a smart financial. You know, this is a space where you can do that and should do that most of the time, a thoughtful financial decision, in my opinion. But, you know, it's also fun where you're like, you know what? What the heck? You know, like when you graded that dual auto of.
I was just going to say that.
Two unknown baseball dudes.
Yeah. Hey.
That was just for the fun, though.
And the stories, right? We need content, right? So we got to. We make mistakes for the sake of the podcast.
You should tell Rachel that, your wife, when you, hey, honey, I know we spent, you know, $1,500 on this Ichiro patch auto, but I needed it for the content.
Listen, you want to go back to our financial episode, okay? All the proof and the numbers.
Yes. I know how you had the 13% right off the head.
Dude, I have had, speaking of cool to cost ratio.
Okay.
I am having such a joy out of collecting New York Knicks cards.
Oh, bro, the one you showed me, the double patch? Who was that?
I got two here. And
Okay.
No, I think about the fact that you could buy Knicks cards at cheap stuff that no one really wants. So when you find the cool, unique stuff that is rare and iconic in some way, and it's your team, I mean, there's nothing better. Because hope I'm never in a position where I have to sell this stuff. But I know if I need to sell Knicks cards for whatever reason, I've got the right stuff to do it.
Yes.
Dude, look at this card I picked up on Facebook for $27 shipped. What's one of the most iconic autograph sets ever that you could think of off the top of your head? 90s basketball.
Is it the ink readable?
Little earlier than that.
Is it the Oh my gosh. Does it have the epic signatures?
I'll give you one more try. You are naming great old school autograph sets. When you get this one, though.
Oh, Fleer Autographics.
There you go. Skybox, but yes.
Okay, sorry.
Charles Oakley.
Oh, bro, you know what? I have that same card.
No way.
I have that same card. Can you keep talking about it? I'm going to see if I can grab it real quick.
Yeah, right on. So I saw that on Facebook. Somebody picked it up at a show. I don't even know where the guy lives, but I said, is that available? And he said 30 shipped goods, and I offered 25. He said 27. So whenever I'm trying to buy a card, basically that like lower end card, maybe $50 and under, I try to put myself in that card show. If I see that Charles Oakley autograph at a showcase in a value box and someone has it price tagged at $30, would I buy it? Or am I blinded by the fact that I haven't been transacting a lot? I see it on Facebook and I just want to buy something. So that's a thought process that goes in my head. And then I'm like, what am I even doing? Charles Oakley, the original 96 Skybox autographics, on-card autograph, Knicks legend, absolutely no-brainer for $27. And it's pretty awesome for that price. For a $27 card, how much joy buying that card brought me. And then the other card, which you did mention, and I realize, and we're going to do a deep dive into some older products, but I absolutely love, maybe my favorite product ever, was from 2002 to 2009, Upper Deck SP Game Used. Upon my research, they actually skipped SP Game Used in 2008. That was Derrick Rose's rookie year, but every other year between 2002 and 2009, Upper Deck made SP Game Used. Amazing patches, amazing dual autographs, LeBron, Jordan, and everything. And it is very rare that I see a card on eBay and I just smash buy it now, but this one was a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, that's disgusting. And I remember you sent it to me right away, and I'm like, bro, that's incredible.
Nate Robinson, Quinn Richardson. Nate Robinson, obviously, we know him as a Knicks legend. 5'9", he could throw it down. The reason I like the Quinn Richardson one so much is it's not like I remember his time with the Knicks that much. But he has the Knuckleheads podcast with Darius Miles, which I listen to every week. So there's a little extra sentimental value to that. Dual game worn patch, numbered out of 50. Easy. If I can go on one box opening streak, just like an unlimited supply of boxes, I would run through the SP Game Used from Upper Deck from 02 to 09. That would be so much fun. Did you find the card?
That was an incredible set. Yes, I did find the card, bro.
Thumbnail that, baby. Wait, let's get the lighting. And I think we got it. You'll figure it out in there. But
That's great, bro. So I found my same Charles Oakley 1996 Skybox Autographics. Same exact card that Craig has. And, bro, you can't go wrong with a 90s autograph set for what did you pay for yours? Mine was like 20, 25, 30.
27 shipped.
Great.
Easy. Yeah. And the dual patch here was 30 after shipping and tax.
Come on. That's great. And like another example, 1998, here's a John Starks autograph. Ooh. 1998 Skybox Autographics, John Starks. So another great Knicks legend. And I know I've told the story before, but I should have had a championship over John Starks in an eighth grade 3-point shootout. I went 6 out of 8 from three. John Starks missed the first two, then he restarted, and then he beat me 7 out of 8.
I will give him the free pass because of his journey to the NBA, so he could take a mulligan against you. Okay. That's fine.
Okay. But yeah, that's great. Definitely high CTCR.
Yeah. So, I mean, the CTCR is crazy on these two Knicks cards.
Yeah.
Before you get into your tickets, I was at my local card shop. Is that a ticket right there?
It is.
Before you get to that, I want your opinion. I was at Alex's MVP, my local card shop. They had a 1971 Super Bowl ticket. Ooh. And if you look at raw sales, graded sales, even like a PSA 2, $200 and up. They had it priced at $125. So I'm like, huh, sounds good.
Okay.
There was a pinhole in it.
Ooh. You know, I don't know that much about the ticket market since I've only been into it for like 3 months. But I will say, as ding, 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 I think we have a good idea here, that a pinhole in it will totally mess up the value.
Automatic one. It's an automatic PSA one, at least with cards. If a card has a pinhole in it, a Michael Jordan rookie could be absolutely perfect and flawless. If there's a pinhole in it, automatic PSA one.
I don't think it's the same in the ticket market because I've been listening to a new podcast, The National Ticket Collectors.
Wow.
I've been binging this.
You are really going all in.
I'm buying more tickets than cards these days. But I'm more interested in trading cards, but I'll have to buy tickets. That's the thing with tickets. It's at least from what I found. But so the National Ticket Collectors, great podcast if you're listening or if you're interested in tickets. And I don't know them at all, but I just saw them and big ticket guys. And they know a lot about like the history, like, you know, of just there's so much sports history that we don't remember or even know about, you know, like they love baseball and the stories that come out of these, you know, old school games that you'd never even remember is crazy. You know, if you think about how few games you really think about through the course of sports history versus how many have actually happened. But yeah. So what did you want my thoughts on just the sadness of the pinhole?
Right. I mean, that's enough of a turnoff for you, I would imagine.
I don't know. It doesn't bother me as much as like the CTCR on that could be higher because, you know, the cost is going to go so far down. No, you're out.
I'm out. I mean, I'm out. I'm already out. I didn't buy the ticket. So there's that.
Well, okay. Let me see what happens. Super Bowl 1971. Like, you know, can I overcome the pinhole with the history of the ticket? You know what I mean?
I probably could have gotten that for $100. And that's just something I'm flipping. I have no connection to the 1971 Super Bowl.
Super Bowl V, Baltimore Colts defeat the Dallas Cowboys 16-13.
High scoring affair.
Johnny Unitas. Yeah. I mean, an all time great quarterback and one of the first great quarterbacks. So, you know, I mean, but yeah, like you said, it's not one of the ones that you really think about.
No. Hey, tell me what your ticket got. And while you're talking about your newest ticket pickup, like, what is your plan with these tickets?
I'm collecting sports history, bro.
Okay. I like that.
At a cheap value, in my opinion. So, you know, I think this market, so it's both, you know, it's my collecting interest and it's my financial interest in my mind in this, at the same time. So it's a longer term thing. You know, I'm not really trying to sell too many of my tickets. Like I have certain ones that I'll, you know, probably display and put out there, but more than half of them are investments, you know, for a longer term where this sports history that I'm collecting, because I'm being very particular about what sports history tickets I'm collecting, when that history either becomes more valued or more importantly, when the ticket market becomes more valued and people start to look at these things as, you know, sports history, like I said, memorabilia, a real ticket to that game and, you know, make you feel almost like a game used feel to it, like get you close to the game or make you at least, you know, hold a little thing that reminds you about it. So that's my plan right now. And really cool that my local card shop, Brian Sports Cards in Greenville, the one I did the story on, Greenville, South Carolina. And he's been inspired to display more of his tickets because of how I keep coming into the shop asking for tickets. And he has a lot. That's something that he PCs also. So that's great. So he can, you know, put them out, buy more. You know, I recently just bought one off of him. And he sold, remember I was talking to you about that ticket to LeBron's first ever home game?
Yes.
In Cleveland. So
I wasn't quite buying it.
Yeah, I wasn't quite either. I mean, I think it's cool. It was his fourth overall game. He debuted in the NBA away at the Sacramento Kings. This one was in a nice grade for how rare it was. I think it was like a pop 10 with five higher, something like that. And he sold it, he said, actually, not to me, for $600.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So I thought that was interesting. And you know what $600 is? The same price I just paid for this ticket. Now, this ticket I'm very, very excited about. This is from Justin. He's Hall of Fame Investments on Instagram. Or maybe he's Kobe Ruth on Instagram and Hall of Fame Investments on eBay. He does tickets full time. He's the one who I bought the 1992 Magic Johnson All-Star Game autographed ticket from, my first ticket purchase. So when I bought that Magic ticket off of him, I told him I'm mainly a Larry Bird guy. But with Magic's connection to Bird, he's also one of my top favorite people. So he showed me this ticket, and I was like, man, that'd be interesting to spend that much on a ticket, which was only like 2 or 3 months ago, and now I've really gotten deeper into it. So this was a ticket that I had seen for a while, been after, been negotiating with, and I'll show it right here. It's from February 4th, 1993, Larry Bird Night at the Boston Garden. So after he retired, they invited, of course, the fans, completely sold out Boston Garden. No game was being played that day. It was just for Larry Bird Night, to go through his career, have a bunch of his former teammates there, take the mic, speak about him, their time with him, their championship teams, three of them with Larry Bird. And then Magic Johnson came out. And anybody who knows and has seen, you can look it up on YouTube too. It's awesome. Bird is just on center court. Bob Costas is there hosting, emceeing the event. The Boston Garden sold out, going wild for Larry Bird Night to celebrate him. And out comes Magic Johnson. He's wearing his Lakers warm-ups. And he's getting a mixture of cheering, some boos, but it was mostly all cheers for Magic. And now he's finally high-fiving people, you know, after being a rival of Bird and, you know, beat LA the whole time. Bird and Magic's whole career going at it. And now he's coming back appreciating Bird, his longtime, you know, rival, and the crowd is finally on his side. And I see the crowd's response, and it immediately gets me emotional of, like, this moment. And I'm just giving you backstory of why this ticket means something to me. So he comes out, and he's, like, says the nicest things you could possibly imagine about battling with Bird all those years and them becoming friends when they shot that Converse commercial in Indiana. Went over to Larry Bird's house where his mom welcomed Magic Johnson in. The two stars who had been, you know, enemies that whole time finally became friends, bonding over a home-cooked meal from Larry Bird's mom and just talking as two basketball-loving dudes. And ever since then, you know, that changed the course of their friendship in the mid-80s. But then full circle to when they had both retired in 93, and I know Magic had that brief comeback attempt in the mid-90s. But to have his rival come and support him at the Larry Bird Night, I thought was so awesome. So this ticket is a full ticket to the tribute. It's signed by both Bird and Magic. It's in raw condition. Signed, though, what I thought was super cool. Larry Bird signed it in green. Magic signed it in yellow. So you got the Sharpie color match. And Justin Kobe Ruth Hall of Fame Investments, who I mentioned I got it from, only had two of them with the green and yellow. He had four others with both blue signatures, but no public sales on this ticket.
Cool.
In the autograph form.
I have to imagine that's worth more than $600.
That's what I thought. He told me. He told me, well, it's all the CTCR. It's all your evaluation of, you know, what the cool to cost ratio. How cool is this? How many dollars cool is this item?
Yeah, I mean, take what I say with a grain of salt. You're a short-term ticket collector. I'm just the friend of a short-term ticket collector. So what do I know?
You're my plus one into the ticket market.
That would require me buying tickets, and I'm probably not going to.
Okay.
So
okay.
I decline your plus one.
Okay. Wow.
It's like that.
Try to extend an invite there, and I got denied. So I really like this, and also the artwork. I don't know if you know Leroy Neiman.
Nope.
So I was at my card shop, and I showed somebody who was I spent 3 hours at Brian Sports Cards.
Jealous.
Just jealous. Talking to people, just talking to other collectors. Because this guy was super busy. I walked in, there's six different groups of people. There's like two different parent-kid combos, and a mother and a daughter, and a grandfather and a son. And then four other individual people. So, like, I'm just waiting to make a deal. So, in the meantime, I'm just talking to everybody about their collecting. You know, what do they like? What do they, you know? such an easy way to talk to people and learn a lot and just share a nice hobby with them. So I mentioned the ticket to a guy who was there. His name's Steele. Super cool dude. And immediately hit it off. He had this Hank Aaron World Series autograph ticket. So that caught my attention because the card store owner, Maddie, brought me over. He's like, come look at this. And he told me Leroy Neiman is, and probably a lot of our listeners know this, the one who did the artwork on the Larry Bird Night ticket, is like this famous Playboy artist. Like, he did all the artwork for the Playboy Mansion. He apparently did a lot of famous sports artwork, like this, you know, Larry Bird Night painting. And I thought, once he said that, I'm like, oh, that's even cooler. I had no idea. So now, fast forward with my connection with Steele, I took his number. I'm like, bro, I love your stuff. You know, let's stay in touch. So he immediately gets home, complete stranger, you know, 30 minutes before meeting him at the card shop. He goes home. He sends me photos of some of the stuff he has, like tickets and other stuff. He sends me a ticket to the Field of Dreams baseball game. And you remember when the Yankees played the White Sox in the cornfield of Iowa?
Okay.
So that was, you know, an ode to the Kevin Costner movie, If You Build It, They Will Come. One of my favorite sports movies also, even though I'm not a huge baseball guy, but that was awesome. So Aaron Judge hit two home runs in that game. First game played on that field. I believe it was Dyersville, Iowa. I remember having to announce that for one of my sportscasts back then. Aaron Judge hit two home runs in that game, and it finished 9-8. So, but just an awesome location. Like, you know, to play that on the same field, you know, as the movie was filmed. Yeah, Dyersville, Iowa. That's right.
That's cool.
So,
Brian's is your go-to LCS?
Yeah.
Good.
That's right.
That's great. How like, we're very spoiled. We have listeners who live in the middle of the country who don't have card shops, and the fact that you have a shop that you could go pop into, spend 3 hours in, we're very lucky for that.
I know. It's great. And so I bought that Field of Dreams ticket from Steele, who I had just met at the card shop, you know, and we just really hit it off with our unique kind of collecting styles. And so that game that I got the ticket to, Chicago White Sox defeating the New York Yankees 9-8, August 12th, 2021. And it was a $30 ticket that I got for, you know, the first game played there in Iowa, that unique location, the ode to the movie, which is, you know, of course, legendary in sports. I'm like, $30. That CTCR is very high.
Sounds like he gave you a steal.
Well, that was the last sale, too. But, I mean, that was like the only
joke. His name's Steele. He gave you a steal. Come on. God.
I'm sorry, bro. I'm being too literal. No, that was good. That's great. I mean, what do you think as my non-ticket friend and non-plus one ticket friend, what do you think of spending $30 on that ticket?
Oh, it's a no-brainer. It's the Field of Dreams field, so anyone who's not a ticket person could still relate to it. And $30 for us to talk about, and the content pays for itself.
Yeah, it was an investment in the content.
Yeah, and that's the type of thing you put out at a table at a show, whether or not you want to sell it or not, and it makes for good conversation.
Yeah, totally agree. So it was interesting, though, trying to value this Larry Bird Night ticket with no sales, but knowing that I have a couple other dual autos of – actually, a few other dual autos of Bird and Magic for cards, and knowing, like, what it costs for them to sign, which Justin was like, yeah, it cost me, like, $500 just for the signatures. Plus, you add in the cost of the ticket, which is like, you know, $50 to $75 raw. And so I'm basically paying a, you know, maybe a $50 to $100 premium on just what it costs to get that ticket and the two autographs. So I'm totally fine with that. And I think it's, you know, it's hard to say what it's worth. I mean, I wouldn't even consider selling it for anything less than $1,000. In my mind, but to me, it's a PC item, so I wouldn't even really need to.
I'd like to find someone with a better Bird Magic collection than you. Not one or the other, but like the stuff with them.
Oh, there's some out there. I think Lakers Exquisite, just because he's a big Lakers and Magic guy, he has. And I've messaged him before. I said, "Listen, bro, if you ever sell any of your Bird and Magic dual autos, I want to, you know, I want to be one of the people you contact. Nice. But yeah, I have four autographs now featuring Bird and Magic on the same card, and one ticket with Bird and Magic on the same card. So here's my four, the two exquisite dual autos of Bird and Magic, the one in the BGS slab, one raw, the College Court SP Authentic, a nod to the 1979 NCAA championship game, Michigan State, Indiana State.
One of these days when you mention that card, you will finally mention the fact that you wouldn't have that if it wasn't for me, but next time.
Yes. No, you're right, bro. You sent me a picture of this.
Next time, listen, it's too late. You already had your chance to shout me out and you missed it. So forget about it.
Sorry. All right, bro.
Next time. Moving on.
I'll try to be better. I won't even, you know what? Let's move on to the next card. The triple autograph, the 1980 Tops Bird and Magic rookie with Dr. J in the middle as the scoring leader. This is the one with all three autographs on there. So I appreciate you pointing that out because, yeah, now I have four cards with Bird and Magic autographs and now one ticket. So, yeah, pretty cool. But that was a nice, like, okay, I'm really taking these tickets serious is what me getting that told me, because to spend $600, you know, that's a lot for me, you know, on an item, especially in a new market. But hey, if I'm going to invest in it, I'd rather invest in my two favorite guys on Larry Bird night. So just to finish that story, Magic Johnson gets introduced, right? So he's in his Lakers warm up, and Larry Bird motions to his stomach, like Larry Bird like pats Magic on the stomach, like, you know, you've gained a little weight since retirement. So they're joking. Magic starts undoing his warm-up and reveals a little bit of a Boston Celtics undershirt underneath his Lakers warm-up. So Larry Bird like notices, he rips open Magic's warm-up, and the crowd goes crazy when they see this rival with the Boston Celtics t-shirt underneath his warm-up. But just, you know, says a lot about how Magic approaches stuff and like his charismatic, you know, funny, not taking everything too serious approach that, you know, was just a great way to show that rivalry. And I think really cool for the country to see that also, you know, two guys, different backgrounds, different races, rivals, but they can still have so much respect and care and kindness for each other. I think that was just, so there's so many levels of that Bird and Magic rivalry, that Larry Bird night with Magic showing up, that ticket, the dual autographs, the team colors of the Sharpies, you know, just super cool for me.
You truly are a professional sports storyteller. Good for you.
Thanks, bro. Thanks for the freedom to nerd out a little bit on that one ticket.
I was going to share a card, but I feel like it doesn't even pale in comparison to that. So I'm just going to hold
on. Please, bro, please.
All right. I mean, iconic sets, and we're going to do an episode. As I said, we're going to really deep dive into like our favorite sets growing up and how they compare to some of today's sets. Cause I'm on record many times saying, I just don't like new product. There hasn't been a new product that has come out in years that I'm like, right, I gotta rip a box of that. But I think first year flawless 2012, 2013, the patches, especially the gold out of 10, are always going to be significant. I picked up this card for like $65.
Okay.
Jonas Valanciunas.
Yeah.
It's the whole S from, I'm assuming, the Raptors, or maybe it's his last name and it's gold. It's out of 10. It's rookie. It's game worn. For the price point, I thought the cool to cost ratio was super high.
Yeah. I didn't realize that was his rookie year.
Yeah. So,
you know what's funny? I recently got a Brandon Knight of that same set, same year, also a rookie. And I think other people really like the cool to cost ratio also because, you know, for around $50 or less than $50, look at this Brandon Knight color match, same set as your Valanciunas, also a rookie. This is, you know, the Detroit Pistons. This is a ruby red, 15 out of 15 with the rookie logo, huge chunky patch. And the great thing about this for that year, bro, and I know you know this, game worn on the
game
rookie.
Game worn for rookie, yeah. I mean, we love that.
Uncommon.
Would you pay for that?
I was into that for like 15 and I traded it at like a $40 value.
Oh, you don't have it anymore. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I got for you. There is potentially some huge, huge stuff with Card Club happening.
Whoa. A springboard off the trip to Fanatics?
Bigger than Fanatics, and that's all I'll say for now.
Whoa.
That's all I will say for
bigger
now.
Than Fanatics? What can be bigger than Fanatics?
I'm not one to put something out there until it's a done deal, so I'll just say there's things happening in the works. That's it. I'll leave it at that. Teaser.
And also, you don't dramatize stuff. You're usually, if anything, you're underselling stuff in general. So I'm very interested. I have no idea what this is. So I can't wait to hear about it. But that's great to see that your hard work is paying off, not for you, but for these kids to have that experience. I mean, whew.
Last little point I want to make. I guess it goes back to the theme. Sometimes when you lose, you really win. I felt like I was losing out on the action, not going to the Philly show, not going to any shows the last few weeks because I've been busy coaching. So I decided to flex. I took out my Michael Jordan PC and I posted it on Instagram. And it was once I see everyone out there making deals, buying, selling, I'm like, you know what? That would be nice, but let me appreciate what I have. And I'm like, I posted my four Michael Jordan cards from the PC, one of which I got from you. And I'm like,
Yep,
this is it right here. I feel good about this.
Yeah.
That's it. I just want to flex for a minute.
That's super. Can you mention those four cards for our unfortunate, you know, for this episode, the only listeners and not the viewers? Can you describe those four? Because I think that's really cool. And I think that's a great lesson too. When you're not producing outwardly, sometimes it's great to look inward.
Look inward, appreciate the collection that you've amassed over the years. You've got a 1986 Fleer rookie card, the classic, and a PSA 8. We've got an 06-07 extra exquisite Michael Jordan quad game worn jersey, numbered out of 25. The one I got from you, 1999 Upper Deck Legends game jersey. And the one on the top I actually traded from Extraordinary Cards a few years ago, 2012-13 Upper Deck exquisite Michael Jordan on card autograph in the North Carolina uniform. So,
yeah. You know what you need now, bro, is something in the Wizards uniform.
Well, I wrote in the caption, my goal for 2024 would be a nice, chunky, three-color, game-worn Bulls patch. Let's make it happen.
Oh, okay. So you don't, because you have the North Carolina, you have the Chicago Bulls, you don't care about the Wizards?
I would get a Wizards card. I did see him play on the Wizards against the Nets in Continental Airlines Arena in 03. So maybe I will get a Wizards card. We shall see.
Or you could get a Wizards ticket if you wanted.
I could also not get a ticket.
Oh, my gosh, bro. I can't believe you.
All right. That's all I got for you.
All right, bro. I think that was really good. Very excited because I have still a lot more to talk about, which is good problem to have. But really happy about your philosophy and what you thought about to, say, hey, listen. Not every loss is a loss. Every loss, you lose a little bit, but you can take a win out of it. And I think, you know, with the Nick Chubb, you know, trading plus cash for the Jim Brown, with you, you know, taking a couple minor losses, by the way, strategic losses on your cards, you might free up cash to get something for the PC like you got and like I got with this Larry Bird Knight Bird and Magic autograph ticket. So, because you never know when that PC purchase is going to pop up. So you know, if you have everything, you're holding out for top dollar on everything, you might not have the ammo ready to fire.
That's it. I'll see you next week.
All right, bro.
Peace.